It's my privilege and honor to present to you our first speaker, future priest, Deacon Shlomo.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated, and may the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today I'm going to be talking about you shall not steal, which is the eighth commandment. If you turn over to Exodus 20 and verse 15 says, you shall not steal. And it's the eighth commandment. And it also says it in Deuteronomy 5 and verse 19. Now, stealing takes place in many different ways. All right? Like, as we all know, not returning people's items or possessions. Then we have gossiping and murder. All right? Taking someone's life. Now, I looked this up in the Webster's New Riverside University Dictionary for stealing, and it says to take the property of another without right or permission. Now, we can steal in different ways, like I said. But today I'm going to be talking about gossiping, all right? How gossiping is part of stealing. The word gossip means one who habitually repeats intimate or private rumors or facts. Now, as we all know, intimate means personal things. Now, we can gossip positively, like as Pastor said, Nora gossiped positively about how we need to follow Yahweh's laws. But we can also gossip negatively. All right, like saying the 1 cent's not the real 1 cent. Or saying how Pastor's wrong. These things is negative gossip. And I looked it up in it. Where the word came from, and it said gossip was originally a compound of God and Sib, meaning godparent. And a Kahan was telling me that God and Sib means the people were sitting around drinking like wine and talking about different things, you know. And that's what God Sib came from, or God gossip. Now, I have a quote from Pastor. It says, Yahweh is strictly against gossip because you're stealing from somebody else. You're betraying confidences and betraying Yahweh when you start running your mouth when you shouldn't. Because of this, you lose out because you cut yourself off from Yahweh. You cut yourself off from the position. All right, and that was from 10795. He gave the sermon, and he was talking about gossip. All right, and this was in the Going On to Perfection book. He was talking about gossip, and when we gossip against Yahweh, against the 1 cent, we're cutting ourselves off from this position. If you turn over to Isaiah. Isaiah 59. Isaiah 59, verse 1 and 2, it says, behold, Yahweh's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, nor his ear heavy that it cannot hear. But your own iniquities have separated you from your father, and your own sins have caused him to hide his face from you, so he will not listen. You cut yourself off from Yahweh when you actually gossip, all right, against the 1 cent and things that are intimate, like I said earlier. All right, now I have a quote from the You Must Not Steal book, and it says, to steal something means to take something that belongs to someone else without permission. That something could be land, water, animals, people, possessions, or even a reputation. And that's what we do when we gossip. Yahweh, being the creator, gave each person life in their bodies. In the same way, he gave each person the right to lawfully acquire possessions, whether by earning, buying, trading, receiving as a gift, or by inheritance. This law commands us to respect and honor each person's right to own his own possessions. And then later on it says, because of stealing throughout the world, companies and stores are forced to have higher prices to account for the amount of merchandise that will be stolen. Many stores have had to close their doors because they have experienced stealing either from customers or from even their employees or employers. So you can see how this stealing actually hurts not just ourselves or the person that was stolen from, but it even hurts the society. All right, and we're going to have to teach these people the way to peace, which is from the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program, all right? And we need to show them the right and proper way to obtain their possessions. And with that, if everyone will please stand, I'd like to turn it over to Future Priest White Buffalo for prayer.
Now this time we get to hear from our first speaker, great future priest, great deacon, Israel Abel.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. The title of my sermon today is Yahweh's Mark. Now keeping Yahweh's Sabbaths is the mark of Yahweh, the sign that you belong to Him. And when we keep all of Yahweh's Sabbaths, including Yahweh's feast day Sabbaths, then you have the understanding to know the will of Yahweh. Now, not only are we to keep Yahweh's seventh day Sabbath, but we are also to keep His feast day Sabbaths. And when we obey Yahweh's laws and observe His ordinances which govern His feast, doing every word that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahweh, then that person is marked as belonging, is marked by Yahweh as belonging to Him. Same when a person obeys Satan by rebelling against Yahweh and His every word, that person is marked as belonging to Satan, as we're told plainly in Romans 6:16. If you'll turn there, Romans 6, verse 16. And that's found on page 878. Romans 6:16, page 878. And it says, "Do you not know that to whom you yield yourselves as servants to obey, his servants you are whom you obey, whether of sin which leads to death, or of obedience which leads to righteousness?" So if you rebel against Yahweh, then you're marked as belonging to Satan. But if you follow Yahweh's every word and keep Yahweh's Sabbaths and feast days, then you are marked as belonging to Yahweh. Now Yahweh does not leave us guessing about the appointed time which He sets, where He says He's going to come meet with His people. Yahweh's feast can be found in Leviticus 23, and if you'll turn with me to Leviticus 23, and we're going to read verse 2. Leviticus 23, verse 2, that's found on page 101. Leviticus 23, verse 2, and it says, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, concerning the feasts of Yahweh, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts." So Yahweh tells us plainly there that these are His feasts. Now Yahweh's Sabbaths are listed in Leviticus 23 and verse 3, and then the Feast of Unleavened Bread can be found in verses 6 through 8, and we'll go ahead and read that. And it says, "And on the 15th day of the same moon is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to Yahweh. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no regular work on it. But you shall offer an offering made by fire," as we've been taught, have zeal and do everything diligently, "made by fire to Yahweh for 7 days. The seventh day you shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no regular work on it." And then the Feast of Pentecost can be found in verse 21. We'll read that one also. It says, "And you shall proclaim on that same day that it may be a holy convocation to you. Shabbat, the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of First Fruits. You shall do no regular work on it. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout your generations." And the Feast of Trumpets can be found in Leviticus 23, verses 24 through 25. The Day of Atonement in verse 27 in Leviticus 23. And then the Feast of Tabernacles, which is the great feast that we're observing right now, is found in verses 34 through 35 of Leviticus 23. And it says, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh moon is the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days unto Yahweh. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no regular work upon it." And this is the feast that we're observing right now. And they're only Yahweh's feast if we observe them the way that Yahweh tells us to. You know, like the Feast of Tabernacles, we have to eat under the sukkah and make sure that we do that every day of this feast. Now, those who practice what Yahweh says will be protected from the wars, the sickness, and the disease, and from the death that is coming upon the earth at this time. Now, not only does keeping Yahweh's feast assure you his protection from the horrors that will soon strike, but they also assure that you will receive eternal life if you practice obeying every word that proceeds from the mouth of Yahweh. In the August 2013 newsletter, "Come to Yahweh's Feast and I will show you the way to 100% peace." And on page 1, under the heading, "Why the Set Feast 3 times each year? It says, "Yahweh's plan is to build a family to whom he can give authority, knowing assuredly they will rule as Yahweh rules, according to Yahweh's laws of righteousness. Those who agree and choose to follow righteousness, 100% perfect righteousness, and overcome sin, will inherit the kingdom of Yahweh." And it has Revelations 22, verse 14, "Blessed are those who keep his laws, that they may have right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates into the city." So remember, keep Yahweh's Sabbaths and feast days according to how he commands us, and so that we can receive this protection from the things that are coming upon the world. And that's all I have for you today. And if you'll all please stand. It's my great honor and privilege to present to you the great Deacon Michael Ossoff Hawkins.
Shalom, saints of Yahweh, pure and righteous, beloved family of Yahweh. You may be seated. We're going to jump right into it. The title of my speech today is "Purple Are the Songs of Israel, Yahweh's Last Days Witness." So we're going to go right into it, and we're going to see a little bit about how this song came together. Okay, if you'll all turn over to Nehemiah 1:9. Nehemiah 1:9, and that's found on page 392. Nehemiah 1:9. And it reads, "But if you turn to me and keep my laws and observe and do them, even though some of you are thrust to the farthest reaches of the earth, I will gather them from there and bring them to the place which I have chosen as a dwelling for my name." Remember that word, gather, gather. Now, on 9/14, it was commissioned to work on this song from the overseer of the house of Yahweh, and this is the original copy. I don't know if you can, I'll just kind of, the original copy with all of my notes, pastor's signature. And when I'd received the song, I had no ideas because we had just written a whole bunch, and you get those things called writer's block. I spent a whole day just trying things. Nothing was working. And so I dug deep in some of the old archives because I have like hundreds of songs, ideas stored. And I went back and I stumbled upon the original Peaceful Solution music done way back in 2001. And so I pulled this up and when it started, the opening line, everything just fit perfectly. And then from there on out, it all came together rather quickly. Now the song, Pastor had finished writing the song on 9/13, 21 years after the signing of the peace treaty. He finished it that day, and then it was commissioned for me to bring this out in the house of Yahweh, 10/13, when it went into effect, 21 years. I thought that was very unique in how Yahweh works with things like that. So I want to get into some of the numbers with this song because it's a very unique and special song that Pastor has written. Okay, so this is what it looks like when I get it. Okay, this is Pastor's speaking parts that I usually type out for him. And when he spoke that part in the song, he didn't have the music. He just read it with feeling and emotion and love for his family. And when I put it in, it was perfect. And it was jaw-dropping, actually, how perfect it turned out. And this is usually what we have. Copyright The House of Yahweh, Yisrael Hawkins, 2014. Okay, so some of these numbers are very unique. It's one page. One in the Strong's means father. It has 44 lines. 44 is the number means father of help. It has 1,847 characters and letters, and that means knowledge. Okay, and from Brown, Driver, and Briggs, it means understanding, wisdom, and teach. Okay, it had 811 events, which is notes and such, and 811 means cluster of grapes. Okay, there's 33 letters in the title, and 33 comes from 44, which means Father of Help again. Now, the length of this song was 6 minutes and 25 seconds. And 625 means to gather, and it comes from 622 and 623, which means gathering, collection, and harvest. Now, Pastor has been gathering in the people since the establishment of the House of Yahweh, and now we're seeing the harvest that is being readied to be gathered in by Yahshua. Pure and bright, the righteous saints of Yahweh, pure purple, pure is what you are and what you are in the eyes of Yahweh. He classifies you as kings and queens, a royal priesthood, and that's what we are becoming. Now, one thing I wanted to point out is there's 341 words in the song. Now, 341 meant enmity and hatred, which is what we're seeing the world has for the laws of Yahweh. But I found only one scripture in all the book of Yahweh that was chapter 3, verse 41. And we're going to turn there real quick. So if you'll turn over to Lamentations 3, 41. Lamentations 3, 41. Let me see, we're back here. Lamentations 3:41, and that's found on Lamentations 3:41. I thought I had it right now. No. It is. Let's see if I can find it. 6. Okay, 6:23. Help from the future priest. Okay, Lamentations 3:41, and it reads, "Let us lift our hearts along with our hands to Yahweh in heaven," and I added in song, which is what we're preparing to do, to sing this glorious song before Yahweh at his great feast. So 3:41, it was the only place in the entire book of Yahweh that had chapter 3, verse 41. Now, if you'll all turn over to 1 Kefa 2:9, and that's found on page 958, 1 Kefa 2:9. Yahweh is gathering in the saints of Yahweh, and the harvest is nearly here. Soon, Yahweh's kingdom will be established, bringing peace to this world, which desperately needs it. And the importance of the music is beyond what we really comprehend at this time and how the music is going to be used and play a part in the ushering in of the kingdom. A pastor told me once that the music is so important, that it has, Yahweh's music has so much power in it. And I encourage you to get the new song CDs. I will tell you this, the first song on the song CD, as well as some of the other ones, but the first song is the other song that our great overseer had written, and it's called Sin Never Again, which is an absolutely beautiful song. I think you'll all really enjoy it. The children did very well. Both men and women sound room, the amount of effort that goes into these song CDs is incredible, and you can see Yahweh's hand all over everything, and they, you know, both sound rooms did a great job. Everybody did a really great job. It turned out really wonderful. Okay, so in 1 Kefa 2:9, it reads, "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a special people, that you would show forth the priests of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light," into the light of the laws of Yahweh, the teachings of Yahweh's last day's witness, Yisroel. Now, the songs of Yahweh, we encourage everybody to write ideas for songs, as it's been brought up before, write poems, because the poems can be used in the songs also. And the inspiration that's coming forth in this time, the things that we're seeing, is beyond comprehension. And we're seeing more and more in the numbers with the signs in the clouds, in the heavens, and in the songs, in the books. Everything that's coming forth is bringing great glory to Yahweh. So what is next for the sound rooms, for the music? Well, I will tell you this. It will be coming from Yahweh's great house of bread. So I'll be closing at this time and turning it over to the great royal priest. And if you'll all please stand. I also forgot, I wanted to mention, Yahweh's name was in the song 13 times. So with that, with honor, I turn it over to one of Yahweh's great priests, the great priest, Kohan Ilya Matithia Hawkins.
Praise Yahweh. Praise Yahweh. Shalom, Yahweh's royal priesthood. You may be seated. It's an honor to stand before the called out ones of Yahweh. A very, very high honor. If you will turn your books of Yahweh over to page 966, we're going to begin there. And the title of this sermon is that the world does not know Yahweh's peace, joy, and love. The world does not know Yahweh's peace, joy, and love. In 1 Yochanan chapter 5, we're going to begin right with love here. We're going to start chapter 5, verse 2. "By this we know that we love the children of Yahweh." I love these clear sentences, this clear understanding we get from the house of Yahweh. "By this we know that we love the children of Yahweh, when we love Yahweh by keeping his laws." So it's not done with just my lips. It's not done by a great leap of faith of jumping off a building or something. It's done by keeping Yahweh's laws. "For this is the love of Yahweh, that we keep his law." But notice here, "and his law is not grievous." It's not grievous. Some of us have endured some very cold nights. Some of us have endured some strong storms. Some of us have endured long travel from thousands of miles across the earth. Some of us have taken very short trips to come to Yahweh's great house, but they ended up being very long, maybe breakdowns and so forth, maybe long hours of traffic. But none of that causes Yahweh's law to be grievous. All of that is just part of what's necessary to be able to rejoice before Yahweh at his great feast, to be able to appear before Yahweh, praise Yahweh, to be able to appear before Yahweh's priest to receive the pure oil of Yahweh, namely Pastor Israel Hawkins, to be able to come into the sanctuary, to be able to give an offering to Yahweh. Without enduring those trials, as we'll read here in just a moment, then of course, then we wouldn't be able to do such things as keep Yahweh's law. So his law isn't grievous, it's a great honor. Let's look over to 2 Timothy real quick, page 937, I believe. The great future priest read this yesterday, and it should echo. This is 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 3, and it's very clear here. And remember, we read this for the men in law class a few days ago, but what makes us special in the house of Yahweh, brethren, is not that we're better than anyone else. We're not better than anyone else. We believe the writings of the laws and the prophets, the Savior and the apostles. That's what makes us special. Chapter 2, verse 3. We must endure evil, is the way I want to put that there. We must endure evil as a loyal soldier of Yeshua Messiah. We must endure hardships. Yes, it is part of the trial, if you would, in order to keep the feast of Yahweh. But in the end, it surely produces a great peace within in each and every one of us. 2 Corinthians 4:4, there's something I want to look at there. I know we know this scripture very well. On page 903. I know some of us may not understand these. Y'all be willing? In these few minutes, we will. For the God of this world, Satan, and her workers, as we'll see, has blinded the minds of those who do not believe. It's not that they've blinded the minds of the believers, but of the unbelievers, those that are of the world. So that the light of the message of the glory of the Messiah, who is the image of Yahweh, should not shine unto them. I have something here from, it's an excerpt, and it's from The Unveiling Satan. This is page 65 from The Unveiling Satan book. Draw our remembrances back to this if we can. It says that Satan brought trouble to the earth. Lucifer, as light bringer, law bringer, teacher, was given authority as leader and teacher of most of the other Malachim. And there is no doubt that she used her authority to influence others as they played a big part in her power of persuasion over the many Malachim who followed her in her rebellion. Now, scripture shows that Satan convinced one third of the Malachim to follow her in rebellion against Yahweh. And these Malachim, these fallen Malachim, of course, then influenced man to rebel against Yahweh. But notice there's two things in particular here. We see Revelations 12:4, but continuing with Pastor's words, it says, instead of Lucifer teaching others to be obedient to Yahweh's universal laws of peace, she taught rebellion, lust, and unfair trade practices. And many of us, we struggle with these things coming to Yahweh's house. And some of it still exists at times in Yahweh's beautiful people. And as we are becoming this royal priesthood, we need to focus and get it totally out of our lives. So remember, if you would, that this was part of Satan's plan to create us into being evil, lustful beings, to want things that are unrighteous, to desire things that we don't even need. I remember some time ago, the great deacon brought out information on Sigmund Freud's nephew, I think Edward Bernays was his name, and how they studied how to control the minds of people, to get them to desire things that they don't need. Well, don't think that came from Sigmund Freud's nephew there, okay? Okay, this was part of Satan's plan to get us away from forming this royal priesthood. Turn over to page 739. Matithia chapter 12. I'm going to kind of piggyback. I don't even like that, really. But I'm going to ride on the words of the great priest yesterday and some of the things that he told us. Matithia 12, verse 30 is where we'll start at least. He who is not with me is against me. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather men together with me scatters abroad. Those who do not join in unity with Israel Hawkins in the house of Yahweh are against Israel Hawkins in the house of Yahweh. Now, we know that. That's very clear. Okay? Now, drop down to verse 34. And listen to what Yeshua was saying to those, actually, who's not with him. He called them brood of vipers. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak right things? We need to keep that in mind, brethren, that when we're dealing with people outside of Yahweh's house, that they are practicing evil. They do not speak right things. So we have no business at all than allowing their mindsets to enter ours, their influence to enter ours. It's very important. They are evil. They do not speak right things. Of course, just like we are, we're evil. But of course, we are repented, and we're now turning to keeping Yahweh's laws. And the world can do the exact same thing. But this is our high priest speaking here now. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth truly speaks. So now, just as we know from the peaceful solution, the true character of a man, the decision-making of a man, it comes from the heart. And it actually shows who and what that man really is. Well, now, what proceeds out of our mouths shows who we are. What proceeds from our fingertips on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, it shows who we are. And he who is not communicating according to the laws of Yahweh, remember the beautiful laws of ownership? We won't go into them today, but remember those beautiful laws, men, that we're not to trespass against? Well, that applies on the internet as well. It should never be a report again in Yahweh's house of a man soliciting some woman in some very improper way. We have very strict instructions to follow, or then we are working against Yahweh's house. It's plain and simple. A righteous tree, verse 35. A righteous tree, a righteous man from the righteous treasure of the heart brings forth righteous things. But an evil man from the evil treasure brings forth evil things. And I say to you, this is how important these words and messages are that we send out to people in the world in this increase of knowledge time period here. And I say to you that every word against the work that men speak, they will give an account for it. Now, we might think no one's going to see this private message. Oh, the priests don't know, young lady. No, you come on to Yahweh's house. Better yet, I'll show you some more things. They will give account for it in the day of sentencing. For by your words, your messages, this applies for cell phones too, okay? For by your words, you will be justified, or by your words, you will be condemned. It's a very serious matter, brother. It's a very serious matter. Turn over to Colossians chapter 2, page 926. chapter 2, verses 16 through 18. Therefore, and Pastor was just speaking on this days ago, therefore, let no man condemn you. Okay, don't let anyone convince us at all for doing these things, or against these things, if you would, for eating and drinking in the observance of a feast day. You work hard to get to this feast day of eating and drinking in the observance of a feast day, or of a new moon, or of a Sabbath day, which are a shadow. It's a protection that we're practicing here, brethren. We're under Yahweh's protection. And if they can convince us not to keep the Sabbath, not to keep the feast, then we no longer have that protection. Isaiah 59, 1 and 2. Which are a shadow from the things to come from the body of Messiah. Verse 18, let no man deprive us of our reward. We have a reward for those long flights, traffic jams, and so forth. Hours and hours of making holy garments, making many meals, planting many crops, making many songs. Let no man deprive us of that reward, brethren, doing it on purpose. You know, even with their, if you think back to Genesis chapter 3 of the serpent and her smooth words, how she was very convincing to Eve. Don't give in to such things, brethren. Don't give in to that at all. We'll see why here, if I can get there in a few minutes. First Yochanan. Let's go to 1 Yochanan chapter 5. It's on page 967. Verse 21, if you would, page 967. Little children, keep yourselves from the defilement of gods. Okay, go up to verse 18. We know that whoever is born of Yahweh does not sin. He doesn't practice sin. But he who has been begotten of Yahweh keeps himself. He protects and guards himself, and the evil one doesn't touch him. Actually, she can't. She can only do what Yahweh allows. We know that we belong to Yahweh, and that the whole world, as we read in 2 Corinthians, is under the control of the evil one. And we know that the Son of Yahweh has come and has given us an understanding. Yes, our high priest guides this house. In order that we may know him who is true, and we are in him who is true, for we are in his Son, Yahshua Messiah. Yahweh is the true Father and eternal life. Again, little children, Yahweh speaking to me there. Keep yourself from the defilement of gods. And that's not just touching something that makes us unclean, but from these improper communications is the way I'd like to put it there. Look to chapter 3. Verse Yochanan, chapter 3. Turn back a page. Of course, we see what sin is. All right, chapter 3, verse 4. Okay, we see verse 7. We've seen it many times. Little children, let no one deceive us. He who practices righteousness. Practicing righteousness, brethren, is not something done in an hour or a moment or a day, but it is going through the day-to-day grind and using the laws of Yahweh to get through that day-to-day grind. Using the law of Yahweh at work, using the law of Yahweh at Walmart. That's practicing righteousness. It's a continuation. And he who does that, Yahweh says, he who does that is righteous, just as he is righteous. Now, he who commits sin, verse 8, is of the devil. It's clear. It's a definition. It's a defining line. For the devil has sinned from the beginning. For this purpose, the Son of Yahweh was manifested. This is what this work is for, to destroy the works of the devil. Down to verse 10, another defining line. In this, the children of Yahweh and the children of the devil are manifest. This is how they're revealed. And it should be on our minds at all times. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of Yahweh. Careful of our communications. Bad company corrupts righteous character, correct? Okay, well, whoever is not does not practice righteousness is not of Yahweh, is bad company. Whether it's mother, brother, sister, little sister, nephew, grandbaby, great-grandmother, it doesn't matter. Sometimes we struggle because we truly have not come out from among them. And every cord that we have left attached to the world, the adversary is going to use every opportunity that she can to pull us and jerk us away from Yahweh. In this, the children of Yahweh and the children of the devil are manifest. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of Yahweh, and he does not love his brother. It doesn't matter, brethren, how close that person seems to be to us. No matter whether they gave us the greatest job of our lives out in the world, if they don't practice righteousness, brethren, then we don't need to be with them. We can go to work, but no, we don't need to fish with them, okay? We don't need to even hang out in the parking lot and drink a Pepsi and communicate with them. We need to stand strong so we can truly become this royal priesthood. This priesthood is separate. It's separate from the world. Any high-level profession, sports athletes, just as a terrible example, they separate themselves from the common public to focus, whether it's camps and so forth that they go to keep their minds focused on the goal. Well, Satan will try to influence our mind through all these other modes of media, and we must guard it. He keeps himself, as we read earlier. So if you all please stand. I'd like to turn the podium over. It's been an honor to the great and awesome priest of Yahweh, the great Kohen David Hammerman Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. May the peace and blessings of our Heavenly Father be Yahweh, be with each and every one of you. You may be seated. It's an honor and a privilege to address Yahweh's called out ones. I would like to start with several scriptures today. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day will not come, unless there comes a falling away first, and the servant of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. And the second scripture I'd like to read here to begin, Revelation 17, verse 11, and the beast that was and is not, indeed he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and is going into perdition. The purpose of the sermon today is to confirm the identity of the man referred to in prophecy as the son of perdition. Yahweh's last day's witness, Yisrael Abel Hawkins, has been revealing his identity since the son of perdition took his office. The title of the sermon today is Pope Francis, the Son of Perdition. Jorge Mario Bergoglio, the 266th Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, you have taken on the name Pope Francis. You are the prophesied son of perdition in these last days. I'd like to give you the definition of the word perdition. Perdition, the word perdition in Revelation 17:11, it comes from the Greek word 684, and it simply means ruin or loss. In a physical sense, in a spiritual sense, in an eternal sense. Commonly, this word is translated destruction. It comes from Greek word 622, which means to destroy fully. The son of perdition means that Pope Francis is the last man in the office of Pope of the Roman Catholic Church. After the time, allow him written in the prophecies, he will be removed from office by Yahshua Messiah, the high priest of the house of Yahweh. If you turn to Daniel chapter 9 and verse 27, Daniel 9 and verse 27, it reads, "And he will confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, 7 years, and in the midst of the week, he will cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Instead, he will cause the prevalence of the Lord of heaven, even unto the destruction," and there's the word perdition, "even unto the destruction that is determined will be poured out upon the desolator." Now, the Holy Scriptures, in addition to using the word son of perdition with respect to this individual, they also call him the servant of sin, the king of fierce expression. He's also called the Lord of heaven. He's called the beast in certain scriptures in Revelation. And he's called the abomination of desolation. And we're going to see why he's called by these names. If I could have the first slide, please. Okay, the first slide. Now, Pope Francis, he was inaugurated into office on March 19th of 2013. The Hebrew word 319 for March 19, it means the last or the end. It comes from word 310, which means the hind part or the last part, and it means that Pope Francis is the end of the line of the popes of the Roman Catholic Church. If you would turn to Matthew 24, verse 15, "Therefore, when you see the Lord of heaven, the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand." Now, from the 8th book of Israel, and I'm going to have quite a few references to the book of Israel today, pastor's teaching, his preaching, and then his writing in the books of Israel. So from the 8th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 27, verse 61, pastor says, this right here, he stands, he takes a stand in contrast. It means contrast to, it means to take a stand in contrast to, in other words, he comes against the laws. He changes the laws. He does away with the laws. So that's the defining mark of Pope Francis's term in office. If you go to Revelation 13, verse 1, Revelation 13, verse 1, it says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his head 10 crowns, and upon his heads the names of blasphemy." From the 8th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 29, verse 102, pastor writes, blasphemy, that's talking against Yahweh, or talking against his laws. The second part of verse 2 here, "And the dragon, the queen of heaven, Satan, Hillel, gave him his power and his throne and great authority." And this is true of all the kings or the popes of the Roman Catholic Church. And it's true of Francis also. She gets his power and authority from the adversary. Verse 3 of Revelation 13. "And I saw one of the heads, as it were, wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered, followed after the beast." Now, the identification of Pope Francis as the son of perdition is made clearer by understanding the history of the Catholic Church for the last 150 years. The Vatican lost land in the late 1800s. The Vatican lost land, property, and money that was paid to the Vatican from the Papal States. And the Vatican also lost sovereignty at that time. The Vatican suffered a terrible wound. Now, Great Kahan Michael brought some information to you on 7/15 of this year regarding the Lateran Treaty. So I'd like to look at the Lateran Treaty at this time here. If you can see the next slide. Okay. The Lateran Treaty, catch up with you here. Revelation 13, verse 3, and I saw one of the heads, and it was wounded to death. During the 1800s, during the unification of Italy in the mid-19th century, the Papal States resisted incorporation into the new nation. Now, the Papal States were property that was owned by the Vatican, property that Vatican had accumulated on the Italian peninsula since the times of Constantine. They accumulated property and wealth, and they had a certain amount of civil governance over what they called the Papal States. The Kingdom of Italy, okay, so in the late 1800s, the Kingdom of Italy was formed, and the Italian government, the Kingdom of Italy, invaded and occupied Romagna, one of the Papal States, in 1860. The Papal State of Latium, including Rome itself, was occupied and annexed in 1870. For the next 60 years, relations between the Vatican and the Italian government were hostile, and the status of the Pope became known as the Roman Question. So the Pope was, at that time, he didn't have clear title to any property in Italy, including the building that he sat in. The Catholic Church lost property and income. The popes considered themselves prisoners in the Vatican, and this is from Wikipedia, under the Lateran Treaty. The next slide here, Revelation 13, and the deadly wound was healed, and the world followed after the beast. The Lateran Treaty was one of the Lateran Pacts of 1929, or the Lateran Accords, agreements made in 1929 between the Kingdom of Italy and the Vatican settling the Roman question. They were named after the Lateran Pacts, after the Lateran Palace, where they were signed on February 11, 1929. The Italian government ratified them on June 7th of 1929. I could have the next slide, please. Okay. Provisions of the Lateran Treaty. Now, this is what the Pope, this is the agreement between the Italian government and the Vatican. It was a political treaty recognizing the full sovereignty of the Vatican in the state of Vatican City. So this is what it's called. It's called a state of Vatican City. And notice the full sovereignty. They became an internationally recognized country. The second thing they got was a plan for the territory of the Vatican State, 109 acres, basically, in the city of Rome. They also got a list of plans and buildings, which, with the exemption from expropriation and taxes, they got a financial settlement, a financial covenant agreed on as a definitive settlement of claims of the Vatican following the loss in 1870 of properties and territory. And they also got, as part of the Lateran Treaty, a concordant regulating relations between the Catholic Church and the Italian state. They were the state-recognized religion. If I could have the next slide, please. Additional provisions of the Lateran Treaty. The agreements included a political treaty which created the state of Vatican City and guaranteed full and independent sovereignty to the Vatican. The Pope was pledged to perpetual neutrality. He's not supposed to take a side in international conflicts. Perpetual neutrality, international relations, and to abstention from mediation in a controversy unless specifically requested by all parties. Next slide, please. Okay, so if you turn to Revelation 17, verse 1, Revelation 17, verse 1, and there came one of the seven Malachim, and Pastor Yisrael Abel Hawkins is the seventh Malach in these last days, who had the seven bowls, and he talked with me, saying to me, come, and I will show you the sentence of the great whore that sits upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. In other words, they practiced idolatry, And the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her idolatry, the wine of her fornication, her teachings. Verse 3, so he carried me away in the spirit into the midst of God worshipers, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet colored beast full of the names of blasphemy, notice, having seven heads and 10 horns. Now this chapter, Revelation 17, identifies the seven heads, and history helps to confirm the identity of the 10 horns, as we will see. Verse 4, and the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of the abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. Verse 5, and upon her head was the name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of the harlots and the abominations of the earth. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints. This is all the persecution that the house of Yahweh has suffered over the years at the hands of the Pope and the Vatican, the Roman Catholic Church. Drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Yahshua. And when I saw this, I wondered with great astonishment. Verse 7, and the Moloch said to me, why are you astonished? And I will tell you the mystery of the woman and the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and 10 horns. Okay, verse 8. Let's slow down a little bit here. The beast which you saw was and is and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. Now, this scripture here is talking about the Catholic Church, but it's also talking about Pope Francis, the last of the popes of the Roman Catholic Church. He's referred to as a beast. Francis ascended through the ranks of the Catholic Church, the bottomless pit of the Catholic Church. And those who dwell on the earth will wonder whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world when they see the beast that was, is, not, and yet is. So the beast that was and is not and yet is. I'll come back to that. Well, what I believe this is telling us is this was the beast that was prophesied to come. This man is not, his character is not equal to the character of the previous popes, the previous kings. And it says, and yet is, yet he has the office of pope. So he was prophesied to come. He's not of the same character of the previous popes, and yet he has the office of the king. So verse 9, and here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are the seven mountains on which the woman sits. Pastor has written 1,000 articles showing us that the Catholic Church is located in Rome, Italy. It is the beast that's talking about here in Revelations. The seven hills of Rome, Aventine Hill, Caelian Hill, Capitoline Hill, Esquiline Hill, Palatine Hill, Quirinal Hill, and Viminal Hill. The seven hills of Rome. Okay, now verse 10 of Revelation 17. And there are seven kings, five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must continue a short time. Now, consider the way this is written. Five have fallen, past tense. One is present tense. The other has yet to come, future tense. Okay, well, let's look a little bit at the history of the popes, the kings that are spoken of here. If I could have the next slide. These are the popes of the Roman Catholic Church since the Lateran Treaty of 1929. King number one, Pius the 11th, he was pope during when the treaty was signed, and he continued for another 10 years after it was signed. He is king number one. King number two, Pius the 12th, he left all of these popes. When one died, the next one took office. So I'm going to give you the end dates. So king number two, Pius the 12th, until October 1958. King number three, John the 23rd. until June of 1963, King number 4, Paul VI, until August of 1978, King number 5, John Paul I. He was in office 33 days, and they found him dead in bed one morning. He, from August until September of 1978. Okay, so those are the five that have fallen when this prophecy was written here. This is a snapshot in time. Now, so five have fallen, so look at the next one. John Paul II. This is the one that is. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean, this one is? And he was in office from October 1978 to April 2005. Okay, if I could have the next slide then. Okay, so to answer the question, what does it mean, this one is? Well, if you look at this one, this one will be the Pope when the house of Yahweh is established in the chief of the nations. That's what this means. Pope John Paul was Pope of the Roman Catholic Church from 1978 to 2005. He is the one who was Pope during the time when Yahweh's last day's work, the house of Yahweh, was established in the chief of the nations. Isaiah 2:2, it will come to pass in the last days that the mountain, the promotion of the house of Yahweh, will be established in the chief of the nations, and it will be raised above all congregations, and all nations will eventually flow to it. If I could have the next slide now. Okay, this slide here, I call it the one is slide. This one is Pope when the house of Yahweh is established. Now I want you to wrap your mind around this and consider the precision of Yahweh's prophecies to know which one would be in office. King number 6, this one is, when the house of Yahweh is established. If you look at the dates here, 10/16/1978, John Paul II became Pope. He's King number 6. And notice what occurred 2.5 years later. Satan tried to kill him. There was an assassination attempt on his life on 5/13/1981. Now notice look at the next date. 2 months later, the House of Yahweh granted official charter from the state of Texas. This is an indication to me of the pure evil of the adversary. You know, she gives her power to these popes, their power and authority to the popes, but yet, if they don't serve her purpose, she will try to get rid of them, which she tried to do, I believe, with respect to John Paul II. So 2 months after the assassination attempt, the House of Yahweh was granted the official charter from the state of Texas at the end of that year, 81, dedication of the first permanent sanctuary by the two witnesses. And then a little more than a year after that, the House of Yahweh officially recognized by the IRS. In other words, the completion of the house of Yahweh being established. And after that, the adversary went back to giving her power and authority to him. He lived another 22 years, and he did great things in for the church in his time in office. So if I could have the next slide, please. If you go to Revelation 17, verse 11. So let's go back to 10. And there are seven kings, five have fallen, one is John Paul II, and the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must continue a short time. This is speaking of Benedict. Benedict was Pope for 7 years, and he actually shortened his own term by retiring and paving the way for Francis to take office. Verse 11, and the beast that was, this is talking about Francis. It's talking about the Catholic Church, yes it is, but it's specifically talking about Francis. And the beast that was and is not, indeed he is the eighth king, he is of the seven, same office, and is going into perdition. This one is going into destruction. And so let's move on to verse 12 here, because I'd like to show you in history the ten horns. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which as yet have not yet received the kingdom. So when the House of Yahweh was established, they had not received their authority. Not at that time. But after the House of Yahweh was established, I'll show you the dates, then they received their authority. And the ten kings which you saw are ten kings, the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which as yet have not received a kingdom, but receive authority with the king, with the kings 1 hour, as kings 1 hour with the beast. So they receive their power. If I could have the next slide, please. Okay, this next slide here is from that same Lateran Treaty article on Wikipedia. You can look it up yourself if they haven't changed it by the time you get to it. But the Lateran Treaty, source Wikipedia, in 1984. Notice, in 1984, the House of Yahweh was established, 1981 through 83. In 1984, an agreement was signed revising the concordant of the Lateran Treaty. Among other things, both sides declared the principle of the Catholic religion as the sole religion of the Italian state, originally referred to by the Lateran Pacts, shall be considered no longer in force. So what did they replace it with? The Church's position as the sole state-supported religion of Italy was also ended, replacing the state financing with a personal income tax called the Otto per mille, to which other religious groups, this is the ten horns right here, other religious groups, Christian and non-Christian, also have access. In 2013, the very year that Pope Francis took office, the other religious groups with access are ten. Ten religious groups. These are the ten horns that are, I believe, the ten horns that are being spoken of here. Ten religions on the Italian peninsula, recognized by the Italian government, that lend their power to Francis, to the Catholic Church. So if I could have the next slide, please. Okay, so if you go to Revelation 17, verse 12, the word power here that these horns are going to show, it means privilege, it means a token of control, it means competency, it means influence. So they lend their influence to Pope Francis, to the Catholic Church. Verse 13. These have one purpose, and they give their power and authority to the beast. These make war with the Lamb. Now notice, when Francis is removed from power, these ten religious powers will also make war against Yahshua, in addition to Francis and you know, his system. But these make war with the Lamb, but the Lamb will overcome them, for he is the ruler of rulers and king of kings. And notice, it's speaking of you here. Those who are with him are called and chosen and faithful. So at this time, when Francis is removed from office, you're going to be with Yahshua. We're going to be with Yahshua at that time. And he said to me, verse 15, the waters which you saw where the horse sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages. Yes, all the world under the control of Pope Francis, under the influence of Pope Francis. And the ten horns which you saw upon the beast, these will hate the whore. Now this is at the end. And the ten horns which you saw upon the beast, these will hate the whore and will make her desolate and naked, and will eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Eighth book of Israel, part 1, chapter 31, verse 52, pastor writes, these will hate the whore. Yes, eventually they will turn in hatred against the whore and burn her with fire. Pastor's words here. Now this, of course, is speaking of the nuclear burning that she herself gets caught up into. So that's at the very end. Now if you look at verse 17, but Yahweh has put it in their hearts to perform his will and to agree and give their kingdom to the beast until the words, the prophecies of Yahweh, will be fulfilled. And the woman which you saw is that great city, Rome, Italy, and the Catholic Church is located there, of course, which reigns upon the kings of the earth. And actually, it's the Vatican City-State, a sovereign nation located in the city of Rome. If you'd all turn to Daniel chapter 8 now, 8 verse 23. Daniel 8 verse 23. Daniel 8 verse 23. In the last days, these are the last days, I hope everyone believes that, of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness. So here, when the sins of the earth have reached their peak, the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king of fierce expression and understanding dark sentences, in other words, he's skilled in trickery and deception, he's going to stand up. Eighth book of Israel, part 1, chapter 31, verses 8 and 9. Pastor writes, with respect to fierce expression. Now fierce, look over to the side notes, it means force. And expression means immoral. So it's forced immorality. Did you get that? Fierce expression, the fierce means force, and the word expression means immorality. So they're trying to force people to do away with the laws of Yahweh, the moral laws of Yahweh. That's what it means. That's what king of fierce expression means. Eighth book of Israel, part 1, chapter 30, verse 43. Now get this in your head now, pastor says. He's going to take a stand at that time, or he is going to be elected pope at that time. So this king of fierce expression is a pope. Pastor's words. Write it whichever way you want, but that's what it means. Therefore, the king of fierce expression will be and is a pope. Pope Francis is the rock star of the gay community. He achieved rock star status on February 13th in the year 2014. He is a rock star, or has achieved rock star status among the gay community for his "Who Am I to Judge?" comments. Okay, here's a picture of Pope Francis on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. Now if you look at the lower right hand corner, it says Pope Francis, the times, they are a changing. Okay, and then if you look at the next slide, this is part of the article that was with this picture, and this came from Yahoo, Rolling Stone magazine. It says, after a disastrous papacy of Benedict, a staunch traditionalist, well, what that means is there were some things that he stood up for. We know that the church, you know, he didn't keep the Sabbath and all, he didn't eat clean foods and all that, but there were some things he did stand up for. Now, if you look at the second paragraph here, this article is talking about Francis here, but he, Pope Francis, had far more radical changes in mind by eschewing, which means choosing not to live at the papal palace, exchanging that for a modest two-bedroom apartment, by publicly scolding church leaders for being obsessed with divisive social issues like gay marriage, birth control, abortion. Who am I to judge? Francis famously replied when asked his views on homosexual priests. So this is the forced immorality that the king of fierce expression is bringing forth. He doesn't care. He doesn't take a stand against gay marriage, against birth control, against abortion, or against homosexuality or sodomy. He is not against these issues, as his predecessors were. If you go to Daniel 8:24, where it reads, "And his, Pope Francis's, power will be mighty, but not through his own power, and he will destroy astoundingly, and he will succeed in practice, and he will destroy the mighty and the holy people." Pastor explains this in the 8th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 29, verse 140, where it reads, "But where it stands, he will destroy the mighty and the holy people." Actually, it's "he will destroy the might and the holiness of the people," is the way this is actually translated. That's what it actually means. So he's coming against the holiness. Any fragment of holiness left in the earth, he's against it. 8th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 30, verses 47 and 49. Pastor's words, "So he will attempt," and that word is "attempt," to destroy the instrument that Yahweh uses to make one mighty or powerful or holy. So let me start over on that one. Pastor writes, "So he will attempt," and that word is "attempt," "to destroy the instrument that Yahweh uses to make one mighty or powerful or holy." Got it? The instrument, what is that instrument? Malachi 4:4. "Remember the laws of Moshe, my servant. These laws make you mighty. It will make you mighty. It will make you powerful because it makes you holy, and you will receive not the power of mankind, which is nothing, but the power of Yahweh." That's what Yahweh's laws do for us. They make us powerful in holiness. Daniel 8, verse 25. "And through his," Pope Francis's, "policy, he will also cause craft, deceit, and fraud to succeed in his heart. And he will magnify himself in his heart, and by peace will destroy many. He will also stand up against the Prince of Peace." So he's the one that will confront Yeshua when Yeshua comes to take him out of office. "He will also stand up against the Prince of Princes," Yeshua. But notice, he will be broken. Francis will be the Catholic Church system, the beast. He will be broken without hands. Broken without hands means that Pope Francis and the system he rules over will go into perdition, into destruction. Let's go over to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 1. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 1. "Now I plead with you, brothers, concerning the coming of our King, Yeshua Messiah, and the gathering together with him, that you not be soon shaken in mind." Don't let anything shake us from the faith, brethren. "Nor be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter, as from us. For that day of Yahweh is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless there comes a falling away first, and the servant of sin is revealed, the son of perdition." And he has been revealed. Pastor has been revealing him since March 19th, when he was inaugurated into office. I believe he was actually elected on the 13th, but he officially took office on the 19th, 3/19 of 2013. Even more than the other popes, Pope Francis is the servant of sin. Verse 4, "who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called gods or that is worshipped, so that he, as the Almighty, sits in the temple of the gods." He sits in Rome, Italy, among all the gods that have been collected there down through the ages. Plus the saints they've created, the gods they've created, since they were established by Constantine. So he sits in this temple of the gods on the seven hills of Rome, showing that he is the mighty one, Elohim. Look at verse 5. Do you not remember when I was still with you, I told you these things? And now you know what is restraining him now, so that he may be revealed in his time. This is the time And the witness, Yisroel Abel Hawkins, is revealing the man of sin, the son of perdition. Look at verse 7. For the mystery of iniquity is already working, but the one restraining him will continue to restrain him until he's made to appear in the midst. Well, he has appeared. He has appeared in the midst. So, you know, there's not all that much time left. Pope Francis has appeared in the midst of the last days. In eighth book of Israel, part 1, chapter 28, verse 55. He's only allowed to do a certain amount, Pastor writes, Yahweh shows to test you and me, to test us to see whether or not we'll stand up and believe what Yahweh says. And then in verse 8 here, and then that lawless one will be revealed, whom Yahshua will remove with the breath of his mouth and make powerless. In other words, he's going to remove him from office. He's going to give the command and he's going to remove the Pope from his office and make powerless with the appearance of his coming. Make powerless, remove Pope Francis from office. Francis and the entire beastly system will go into perdition, into destruction. Verse 9, whose coming is according to the energy of Satan, who works with all power and signs and lying wonders. Verse 10, with all the deceivableness of sin. Now these words, the deceivableness of sin, you know, Francis is very popular. He's very popular in the world today. He's a very popular pope, probably the most popular of all the kings. But he's very popular. He has a wide following from his kissing babies and you know, people with health problems. But he has a great following in the world at this time. And I call it the deceivable, or my understanding is that it's part of the deceivableness of sin. In those who are perishing, because they do not love, they do not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this reason, notice, Yahweh will send them strong delusion, that they would believe the deception, in order that all those may be judged as not having believed the truth, but as having delighted in sin. So they call this the Francis effect, the effect that he has on people in the world. They call it the Francis effect. If I could have the next slide, please. Okay, this slide here . This is the timeline of the Lateran Treaty. We saw some of this information earlier, but it has some important dates that have been added here. 1922, Pius XI became Pope. He's King number one. The second item there, the birth of the witness, J.G. Hawkins. Just call me Jacob. He was born 9/11/1926. And then the next date, the signing of the Lateran Treaty in 1929. And then the next important date there, the birth of the witness, Buffalo Bill, Yisroel Abel Hawkins. Okay, so you see the Lateran Treaty was signed right in the middle of the birth of Yahweh's two witnesses. Now, then we have the second king, number two. He took office in 1939, Pius XII. King number three took office in 58, John the 23rd. King number four, he took office in 1963, King number five, John Paul I, in office for 33 days until in 1978. And then, if I could have the next slide, the man of sin, Francis, revealed. The first item on this timeline is John Paul II became Pope. He's the one who is in power during the establishment of the House of Yahweh. He's King number six. And this was the one that was to come. Benedict XVI became Pope in 2005. He's King number seven. And the prophecy says that he would be there a shortened time. Benedict XVI resigned after 7 years in office. And then look at the next one. Francis became Pope. He's King number eight. Okay, if I could have the next slide then, please. Okay, let's go back. Let's turn back now a couple chapters in Revelation 2, or actually we're going to Revelation 13, verse 4. We started out here with the deadly wound that was healed, the Pope getting his sovereignty, property, and a cash settlement back in 1929. Now let's look at verse 4 here. Revelation 13, verse 4, and they worshiped the dragon who gave the power to the beast. Now the dragon, of course, is Satan, who gave power to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Now, from the 8th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 29, verse 106, Pastor writes, now this beast brings forth a different war than the quartet. The quartet brings forth nuclear war. The beast brings forth a war against the holiness of Yahweh, against every bit of the holiness of Yahweh. Verse 5, and there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to make war 42 moons. That's 1,260 days. It's 42 moons, 42 months. Okay. From the 8th book of Israel, Pastor writes in part 1, chapter 30, verse 72, and there was given unto him, notice, it's given unto him, a mouth speaking great things. This, of course, comes from Madonna, Mary. Pastor doesn't use the word Mary here, but he says Madonna, or what all those, the names that they're calling her now, Queen of Heaven, the great dragon that was cast down. Also, from the 8th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 31, verse 91, make war for 42 moons. Pastor comments here, he writes, 42 moons, you get that? 42 moons, so it's limited. Yes, it's limited to 42 moons. He's actually limited here as to what he can do and how long Yahweh is going to allow this to go. And this is this next one here from the book of Israel. I want you to listen to this closely also. 8th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 31, verse 14, Pastor writes, this great religion that is fighting against or bringing forced immoralities to the world today, knocking out the holiness, attacking the holiness of the people. Okay, so let's go to the next slide. This is the man of sin, Francis Revealed. He took office March 13th, 2013, became Pope. He is King number 8. The next point, Francis, the day he took office, Francis begins war against the holiness of Yahweh's laws, for 42 moons. The next point, Francis on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, February of this year. August of this year, Francis predicts his death in 2 to 3 years. I'll show you the article on that. And then the last point here, if you take the date he was inaugurated into office, and you add 42 moons, he's going to be removed from office about September 17th, 2016. Now, that's not that far away, brethren, and there's a lot of prophecies that will be fulfilled between now and 2 years from now. Tabernacles 2 years from now. There's a lot of prophecies that are going to be fulfilled. The nuclear wars, the Sea of Glass, all those things, They're going to be completed by that time. So if I could have the next slide, please. If you go back to Revelation 13, verse 5, I would also, with respect to that 42 moons, I'd also like to read, if you would write down, Revelation 11, verse 3. It says, I will give my two witnesses to perform their prophetic offices, and they will foretell events about the 3.5 years, the 1,260 days, those cast about with darkness. And if you look at the world today, it's abounding in darkness. It's abounding in the battle against holiness. It's abounding in sin. It's abounding in disease. It's abounding in wars. And it's only going to get worse before it gets better. Remember the many prophecies. So remember the many prophecies that will be completed between now and 2 years from now, when Pope Francis is removed from office. The nuclear dust will be settled by that time, by the time Yeshua removes Pope Francis from office. You are going to be very busy people between now and then. Let's go to Revelation chapter 13 and verse 6. Revelation chapter 13 and verse 6. And I opened, and she opened his mouth in blasphemy against Yahweh to blaspheme his name and his house and those who dwell in heaven. Pastor writes here, 8th book of Israel, part 1, chapter 31, verse 92. He opens his mouth in blasphemy against Yahweh to blaspheme his name. Anyone using the name of Yahweh, that's just part of it, Pastor writes. That's just part of it. As we saw in Daniel, he's going to attack the holiness of the people. Any and all holiness that is left in and among the nations, they are attacking at this time. In Revelation 13, verse 7, and it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority was given him over all tribes, peoples, and languages and nations. Seventh book of Israel, part 2, chapter 34, verse 40. Pastor writes, make war with the saints and prevailed against them. This is the way it had to be, because Yahweh will not interfere in the government that he has given Satan until that time. So this is, Pastor is telling me in this writing, he's saying Yahweh's going to allow him to do this for 42 moons. He's not going to shorten that time. He's going to give him his full time to do his work. This is, Pastor writes here, this is the way it had to be, because Yahweh will not interfere in the government that he has given Satan until the set time. Verse 8 of Revelation 13. And all who dwell upon the earth will worship him whose names have not been written from the foundations of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. I'd like the next slide now, please. So Francis has been in office about a year and a half, and on August 19th of this year, Francis was returning from a trip in Seoul, South Korea. So this is, Pope Francis says he expects to live two or three more years. Talking to reporters on a flight back to the Vatican from Seoul, from South Korea, the 77-year-old pontiff, who seemed in good spirits, was asked about his global popularity. There, right there is the deceivableness of sin, his global popularity. And this is a quote from Francis. He said, I see it as the generosity of the people of God. I try to think of my sins, my mistakes, not to become proud, because I know that it will last only a short time. And then the last sentence here, continuing his quote, two or three years, and then I'll be off to the Father's house. Those are his exact words. Two or three years, and I'll be off to the Father's house. Well, Francis, if you don't repent by then, Yeshua will come to you. And that's what the prophecies indicate. If I could have the next slide, please. In Revelation 13, verse 7, for the mystery of iniquity is already working, but the one restraining him will continue to restrain him until he is made to appear in the midst. And 8th book of Israel, chapter 21, verse 55. 8th book of Israel, chapter 28, page 321, verse 55. Pastor writes, he's only allowed to do a certain amount, Yahweh shows, to test you and me, to test us to see whether or not we'll stand up and believe what he says. I'd like you to go to Revelation 19 and verse 9. I believe this applies to Francis. and we'd like to read it. Revelation 19, verse 19. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet. And I'm not saying that I know who the false prophet is, but I do know that, according to articles I've read, that Pope Francis counsels with Benedict on a frequent basis. But anyway, the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet, who worked signs before him, with which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast, and those who worshipped his likeness. These both were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. Now, the next excerpt from the book of Ezra is a very beautiful passage that information that Pastor wrote here. He said, this is from the seventh book of Ezra, part 2, page 361, verse 86. He says, we're going to be called up out of this world to a beautiful sea of glass, where this wedding will take place for all of those who have on the righteousness. And then when we come back, we will have the power to change the world. And that's exactly what the prophecy shows will take place. The last verse here in Revelation 13, verse 8, and then that lawless one will be revealed, whom Yahshua will remove with the breath of his mouth and make powerless with the appearance of his coming. I'd like to show the final slide here at this time. This slide here is, of course, from the 2014 House of Yahweh calendar, Yahweh's Kingdom, the Witness, Yisrael Abel Hawkins, versus Satan's Kingdom, the Son of Perdition, Pope Francis there. And so I just wanted to conclude with that as far as the slides are concerned. If I could have the next slide then, or that's the end of the slides. But I'd like you to turn from my final scripture here. I'd like you to turn to Daniel chapter 5, and I'd like to read 25 through 28. I'm not going to read these verses exactly as they're written. You have them there that are written. Yahweh's prophet Daniel, he interpreted the writing on the wall for the king of Babylon. We know that Yisrael Hawkins is also referred to as Zerubbabel, the one who opposes Babylon. So just as Yahweh's prophet Daniel interpreted the writing on the wall for the king of Babylon, so also the prophet Daniel's wrote the pattern of words that Yeshua will speak to Pope Francis with the breath of his mouth. So in Daniel 5, verse 25 through 28, and like I said, I've altered these words somewhat to apply to the son of perdition. So this is the writing that is written, meni, meni, tekel, aparsin. This is the interpretation of the matter. Meni means to number. Yahweh has numbered your kingdom, and he will end it. Tekel means to weigh. You have been weighed on the scales and are found lacking. Perez, to divide, your kingdom will be ended and given to the saints of Yahweh. Jorge Mario Bergoglio, the 266th Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, you who are called Pope Francis, Yahweh's last day's witness, Yisrael Abel Hawkins, has revealed that you are the prophesied son of perdition, and Yahweh's inspired prophecies show that your kingdom will be ended and given to the saints of Yahweh. May Yahweh bless your understanding. If you'd all please stand. It's my honor and privilege to turn the services over to the great Kahan for closing prayer.